the outbound product marketer might be more of like that saying, product managers put products on the shelves, product marketers get them off the shelf.
Yep.
I hate that saying. However,
oh, you do.
I think that, but this is why, and I hate it because it completely ignores the inbound product marketing side, right? But I think that's a great mental model for the outbound product marketing side. Great. So we have a product. It's, you know, approaching being ready to bring to market. How do we bring the right stakeholders together, the customer facing teams? How do we build a launch plan? How do we work with the campaign teams to make sure there's a campaign narrative and all of the channels are kind of singing from the same songbook? And then post launch, how do we drive continued adoption within our customer base?
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Product Marketing Life podcast, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers to talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. I'm Colin Majak, lead PMM at Classy, and in this episode, I got a chance to sit down with every PMM's favorite camp counselor, Tamara Graminski. Now, if you don't know Tamara, Tamara is the founder of PMM Camp. And prior to that, she had a really impressive career in product marketing. In this episode, we did a deep dive on the differences between inbound and outbound PMM. And just to give you a hint of what's to come, we're not talking about your sales or go-to-market motion. We also talked about how the classic analogy of how product managers get products onto shelves and product marketers get them off of shelves just doesn't work to explain PMM in the modern context. I really enjoyed this episode and I think you will too. Enjoy the show. Tamara, this feels really overdue. So thank you for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. I always love to come on and I've been so excited to come on with you as the host. So thank you very much for having me.
I was telling this to Madison Leonard and it was true of that. You two were for sure on my short list of people that I wanted to have on the podcast. So as soon as I was asked, like, it's gotta be Tamara, it's gotta be Madison, it's gotta be Jason. It's got like, you know, just the crew, but
yeah,
it's funny.
Totally. That takes me back to that like event that we were at where we all had that lunch and I felt like we had such great conversations.
Yeah. I actually, on that note, I thought of you last month because I was in New Orleans and I thought about your love for Blue Bottle's Nola coffee that they call it. What do they put in there? Is it like chicory and vanilla or something like that?
Yeah, it's chicory, vanilla, I think, coffee. But yeah, I'm obsessed. It's so good. And we don't have it in Canada. So anytime I go to America and there's a Blue Bottle, I have to get it every single day.
See, ironically, I did not actually see any New Orleans coffee shops making a recipe like that. So I don't know where a Blue Bottle got that idea from. So if anything, that demonstrates that you could just create a category if you want to. Just call
That's
it
a whole other podcast altogether, right?
But even before that, I don't know if you remember this, but my first impression of you was when I'd gone through a layoff and I was gunning hard for an open PMM position at Kajabi. Do you remember this? I was like bordering
on,
I was bordering on obnoxious, but I think I did a pricing breakdown of Kajabi and Teachable at that time, which it sounds like you knew someone, so that didn't work. But that even then, it should say that for a long time, I've admired and thought like, this is someone I'd want to know and work for. And so it feels fun that we get to hang out and do things like this.
I love that. Thank you. It's so sweet. And yeah, I think the role went to someone who I'd previously worked with before that was kind of perfect for the spot. But I think that's a great example of how important it is to like shoot your shot and make connections, because you were totally on my radar, wasn't the right fit for that role. But then when I saw you in San Fran at the conference, I was excited to finally get to put a face to the name. I wanted to talk with you because I already felt like you'd put so much energy into our relationship and now we're friends. And so it's like one small effort from you has now led to a really cool friendship. So it's a good reminder that to always reach out and put the effort in.
Yeah. I'm always encouraging people to shoot their shot for jobs. And because a lot of times it has at minimum, like got me an interview or got a relationship where like same thing with Julien Sauvage. I did a similar thing at Clary and it's, I think for sure what put me on the map. And now I'll have him on sometime in the near future. Now, I want to set the stage for a second. You've had a really impressive product marketing career. You were chief strategy officer at Unbounce, and I've heard you've had a very popular take on how that's kind of an ideal path for PMMs. And then VP of product marketing, and I think lifecycle at Kajabi. And I think you're one of the few people I know, at least, who can actually say you've been doing product product marketing in a proper sense for 10 years. With all that in mind, you've kind of shifted and PMM camp has sort of become your bread and butter. So I'd love to, for people who don't know, what is PMM camp? And then why did you decide to build it?
Yes, definitely. Happy to chat about that. So PMM Camp is essentially a community for strategic product marketing leaders. And I use the term community in the loosest sense because I think of everyone who engages with PMM Camp as a camper, is what we call them.
Campers.
And these can be folks, campers. These can be folks who read my newsletter. They could be folks who, you know, follow me on LinkedIn, or sometimes these are folks who pay for the paid membership. So there is a paid membership community as part of my broader community. But really my goal is to champion strategic product marketing. And it all came out of my own experience kind of growing up in product marketing. So as you mentioned, I'm a career product marketer. I feel like there's very few of us.
Yeah.
And not only am I a career product marketer, but I got the opportunity to be a leader very early in my career. And so I've actually been I'm a two-time VP product marketer, one-time CSO, two-time director, all in my career. So yeah. I've built a lot of teams. I've built a lot of people who've now gone on to be directors. And I just kept seeing the same patterns over and over, that people felt like there's not enough space to be strategic. I don't even know what being strategic really means. It feels like it's always a battle. And so I kind of have made this my life mission to help product marketers, regardless of their level, really amplify their impact on an org, be strategic, but also balance that with actually getting wins as well. I think people think being strategic means that we're just like living in the clouds. We're not actually doing the work.
All theory.
And,
yeah,
exactly. And that's not true at all. And then the second piece came out is as I started to, you know, expose myself to more and more leaders. So think, you know, senior PMMs, directors and above, I kept hearing the same things, which was, we're all self-taught. Like there was no one who was a VP of product marketing when I was coming up. And so there's a lot of, I don't know if I want to call it imposter syndrome, but there's a lot of being self-taught and then kind of wondering, am I missing something? Have I missed something along the way? And so I had this real desire to bring people together for connection, because I think it can be a lonely and misunderstood job, but also just for peer learning. And so I don't really see myself as being the teacher in a traditional sense. I see myself as being a facilitator of really smart people.
Camp counselor.
Camp counselor tomorrow, reporting for duty.
Amazing. I'm curious about that shift from being a individual contributor on a PMM team into more of a PMM leadership role. I think on paper, I would have assumed that when you move to leadership, you get more room to do strategic, less execution, more getting to land on strategic stuff. But I could also see someone getting kind of lost in all the leadership responsibilities, and now you're the person who's dragged into meetings. I'd be curious, what was your experience? Did you feel like you had more margin to be strategic? Do you feel like that's the case with most PMMs who kind of move into leadership? Because I could see that being a pro or con for someone wanting to be a PMM leader.
So I think that this is something very unique to product marketing as well. So I'm glad you asked this question. Most people most career functions, I should say, even in other parts of marketing, as you move up, you take on people management responsibilities and you spend a lot more of your time managing people and managing stakeholders across the org. I think with product marketing, we're a function that's always very small. We run lean, even in the largest of companies. And most product marketing directors, yes, they might manage one, two, or three people. However, they're also doing work and they're managing stakeholders and they're like building strategy for the CEO. And so I actually think the director of product marketing is one of the hardest roles at any company. It is so taxing and you have to like operate up and down. So I would say what does help about being promoted and being in a leadership role is you naturally get a level of respect and responsibility. And that kind of opens the doors for you to be in more strategic conversations. And so when someone else across the org says, oh, well, she's a director, she must be good at her job, or I must be able to trust her perspective, then I think that opens the opportunity. Versus when you're an IC, you're still kind of proving yourself. You maybe don't have that history to open you up to the right conversations. I think that's the main difference. I don't think it's that you like all of a sudden have more time, or like that a light bulb goes off in your brain and you're like, I understand strategy now. I can put it all together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it's kind of consistent with my boss, Tom, I report to a director of product marketing who then reports up into our VP of marketing. And I feel like he has a seat at the table at very strategic conversations. And yeah. I think partially because you moved to that level and a lot of times you're no longer tied to an area of the product. And so you're just kind of seeing product marketing as a function. And so you have kind of your hand strategically or like on a consultative basis in all of it. And it's funny, I think you do that person can become indispensable. Like I was in a call where our CEO said, like, I don't know what I'd do if Tom left. And so that makes a ton of sense. I'm curious then on that note, what people should know, just as an aside, you mentioned this earlier, but I think the newsletter that you have at PMM Camp is one of the best newsletters out there. Like it's full of substance every single time. It's not fluff. It's like really, really quality. And something that you laid out recently kind of ties into this a bit. Like you laid out a framework for how to think about product marketing. And there's a lot of debate out there about like, what is product marketing? How do you slice up the roles? What's the future of titles around PMM? But you had a really simple, yeah, I think helpful framework about inbound versus outbound PMM. And so I'd be curious, I found it very helpful. Let's take it from the top. What do you mean when you say inbound and outbound PMM?
Yes. So first, I do not mean the go-to-market motion. I do not mean like how your sales is structured or anything like that. Because I think that's the first thing that comes to mind. And
that was what I thought. Yeah.
I did not make up this term. So I'll first take a step back to tell you how it even came across my radar. Because same as you, I've been thinking about so many different ways to divide the function, to explain the function, to allocate resources on my teams, all of that. But one of the campers inside of the paid community, he works at TikTok. And I have camper calls where I just like hang out with folks, get to hear what's going on with them. I give them some advice. And I was, hey, like, I actually super curious, how is PMM structured at TikTok? And he goes, well, we have two teams. We have an inbound team and an outbound team. I was like, tell me more about that.
Yeah, it's like you're a consumer brand. What does that mean?
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, I'm so confused. So we spent quite a bit of time chatting about that. This was over a year ago. And then after I heard that term, I started researching, you know, what companies were using these terms. And it was a lot of folks like Amazon, Meta, but also some smaller companies as well. And so what is it? It is essentially the breaking point or the dividing point in the product lifecycle between developing the product and the roadmap and actually bringing the product to market. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So an inbound product marketer is focused on, let's say, insight collection and insight allocation. So how do we do competitive? How do we understand what market trends, what the size of the market is? What ponds should we be fishing in? And then how do we make sure that we're, you know, allocating or distributing those insights to the right product managers, to the right teams, so that they're using these insights from the very beginning of the product development process to actually make sure we're building the right product for the right customer to deliver the right value proposition. The outbound product marketer might be more of like that saying, product managers put products on the shelves, product marketers get them off the shelf.
Yep.
I hate that saying. However,
oh, you do.
I think that,
okay, we can talk more about that.
I do. We'll circle back on that one. But this is why, and I hate it because it completely ignores the inbound product marketing side, right? But I think that's a great mental model for the outbound product marketing side. Great. So we have a product. It's, you know, approaching being ready to bring to market. How do we bring the right stakeholders together, the customer-facing teams? How do we build a launch plan? How do we work with the campaign teams to make sure there's a campaign narrative and all of the channels are kind of singing from the same songbook? And then post-launch, how do we drive continued adoption within our customer base? So that's really the differences between the two roles.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I think the closest I've heard to that, and I wonder if you'd think this is similar or different, if I'm wrapping my head around it, is I talked to a company at one point and they had split up their PMM team in what they called the market-facing team and a product-facing team. And it seems like a similar split, but basically the product-facing team was anything technical, any influence on the roadmap, and a lot of consolidation of research that went directly to the product team, but they never touched anything that really made its way out into the market. And then by the flip side, all that kind of work on what we were going to build was done over here. And then there was a handoff point where the market-facing team effectively would run with it. Does that sound similar, or is there maybe something missing there?
I think it's a similar concept, but I think what we're missing, which was part of the thesis in my newsletter, was yes, at TikTok, it was two teams. I think what I was trying to communicate in the newsletter was it doesn't have to be two teams. This is just the two sides of product marketing, two sides of the same coin. Yeah. And so if you're a single, you know, a solo PMM, or you're a director managing three PMMs, I'm not necessarily saying you have to have one inbound or one outbound. Yeah. I mean, in most chances, that's actually just going to be creating the same friction that we see today, which is like the PM team does strategy, the PMM team has to market something that hasn't been properly developed. What more when I'm allocating, I'm trying to say that in a political way, more what I'm allocating for, because I think the majority of people work at companies where they are the only product marketer or they have less than three people on the team. I think the PMA just did a great, in the State of Product Marketing 2024, the stats were resoundingly that people are on a team of three PMMs or less. So if that's the case, most likely you are going to be required to kind of flex both of these muscles. And I think what I want to advocate for is first that you understand that there are two muscles to be flexed, to help understand when you should be using one side or the other. And how do you maybe know which one you're best suited for so that you can try to, you know, make sure if you're like a leader that you're developing the right team that has all of the muscles, or if maybe you are strong at one side and not the other, you can surround yourself with the right mentors or learning opportunities to strengthen where you need to. That's kind of my take on it. But again, that comes from my experience working at more like growth stage businesses versus a TikTok where they might have like 100 PMMs.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense to me. I have a hypothesis that orgs tend to overdevelop one side. I'll come back to that in a second. But I'm curious, like the impact of this framework seems really dependent on your context, or really not impact as much as application. Like what do you do with this? Like team size, your product and company position, your sales motion. Now, as I see it, product marketing wins or loses on how they prioritize, like how they actually do, because there's so much to do at any given time. And the breadth of the role, even as the fact that you could split it into inbound, outbound, like if you look at your list of what you listed, it's like 15 things, five, seven or so on each side. In what sort of circumstances would you choose to prioritize inbound product marketing? And then which would you say, oh no, I need to focus on or prioritize outbound? Like how would you help someone thinking about that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think a lot of it has to do with like where you are in the product development life cycle. So we'll start with you being a business with like a single product, because that's the easiest way to explain this. So if you're a business with a single product, if you are pre-revenue, then you should be definitely focused on inbound product marketing, right? You need to make sure that you are getting the right insights to make sure that you're building the right thing for the right people. Like, you should not be spending a lot of money on channel strategy and bringing products to market before you even have this product or are making money. So that's an obvious example. But I think as you start to move along the development lifecycle, and maybe you're in beta, or you know, you've moved into general availability, but you're just having some early adopters, then I think you start to shift the ratio a little bit more. And so it really, it's not one or the other, but it's perhaps ratios. And then you get to a point where, great, well, like we're post-product market fit. Once you've hit post-product market fit, that's probably where most of your effort is now going to swing to the other end of the pendulum, where you're going to be focused on outbound product marketing, because like you've built the right thing, you've marketed it for the right person, you're pretty confident on your value proposition, and now it's about putting fuel on the fire. However, this is where now most companies say, well, how do I make more money? How do I grow faster? So they either start to think about going into new markets or building new products, in which case you kind of go back to square one. And now you might have a product marketer who's doing both things. Or maybe let's say you hire a second product marketer and one of them is focused on the main product line as outbound. One of them now is going back to those kind of the basics of the inbound of like, what should we build next? For whom? Why? What problems are we solving? And so it's kind of a constant shuffle.
That makes a lot of sense, thinking about product market fit as being this type of dividing line that leading up to that no-brainer, you need to think about the inbound side where you're thinking about, is this thing actually matching the market's desire and needs? And then post-product market fit, all right, now we need to get into people's hands and think about how they're going to discover us, our position in the marketplace, that sort of thing. And it sounds like there's this decision point you have to hit where you have to decide, all right, we've found product market fit. Have we hit the revenue or kind of maximized the revenue we think we can hit in this market? And now it's time to pivot back to inbound, or let's keep pouring the fire on outbound and seeing if we can kind of get more. I'm curious about that dividing line. I wonder if at times people will over-index on outbound because they think that's the reason that they haven't started selling, or the confusion that could come to mind for me is, how do you know whether you've hit product, don't have product market fit, or you just haven't actually done the outbound work yet?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, like, again, probably a PMF whole other conversation. Whole thing, yeah. And for me, at least my philosophy to building product market fit, and I think I often say this, I have the luxury of working in product-led businesses. And so the cycles are shorter, so the feedback loops are shorter. But for me, like, it's not like we don't have product market fit and then one day we do. It's we're building, we're shipping, we're testing, we're iterating, we're doing that all over again. And so ideally, you're building up scalable channels where you know that the channel works, it has a reasonable CAC, you know which type of customer you're acquiring and the message that will work to acquire them. And then you're kind of adding on another channel and another channel. And so, I mean, if you have gotten to the point where you're like, no channel works for me, that's probably a good sign that it is product market fit and not just that you haven't done enough outbound. But if you're like, you know what, I've only tested one channel, it was lackluster, but like, there's some grit there, like we're catching something, then yeah, keep putting more effort into outbound. And that's why I worry about teams that completely divide the two. Yeah. And I think there's probably a harmony in them being two sides of a coin as opposed to like two departments or two teams. So like I can give you an example. At Unbounce, I've actually like built my teams this way almost without knowing it. And so I've always appreciated that there's two skill sets. There are product marketers that are great at like product launch, I would say, and go to market. And then there's product marketers who are more research analyst based, I would say. And I also recognize that even in a mature product, you often need that research analyst-y skill set, right? Like think about maybe your repricing or whatever might be required. That's a different skill set than someone who's great at product launch. Like not everyone wants to jump into a, like a spreadsheet, right? But some people really want to jump into a spreadsheet. So at Unbounce, whenever I'm hiring for a role, I actually write a custom job description. And I've done this at every company I've ever managed a team. I do not recycle the same JD. I think about where do I need this person to excel at? And I'm thinking, do they need to be more research-based, outbound, whatever it might be. But then I always have a role on the team that I call like my product marketing, like segmentation, pricing and packaging, research PMM. And let's just call them an inbound PMM now that we have the language to do that. And their role, they often are like almost a mini me in some ways. Like they're helping me get the right insights I need to develop my strategies, but then they're also feeding strategies into the rest of the PMMs. And so they're almost a management consultant for my product marketing team. And so my different product marketers can leverage them and say, hey, I have this new product I'm working on building with my product manager. We're going to need a pricing strategy for it. Can you help us develop that? Or, hey, we really need to deeply understand our segments for this. Can you help me understand like some early product usage behaviors that we're seeing? And so there's always a person on the team that we can tap into and use across product portfolios, but someone who has this deep skill set.
But they're not necessarily someone who's thinking like, let me come up with the awesome story that we're going to take to market for this. Like this, that may not be the thing that gets them excited, but that deep research fits them.
Exactly. I think what they're uncovering from the research is like, what are the key points of value that someone would be willing to pay for and that would get someone excited. And then the outbound PMM is the one that develops the narrative that takes those key points of value and actually brings it to life a little bit more.
Now, as someone who's in PMM, I immediately see the value of having someone like that and who's wired that way. But from my experience, it feels like companies place a higher value on the outbound PMM. And I think it's partially because that's what people think of when they think of product marketing. They think of launches, they think of go to market. It's very outward facing. Sales sees it. It's stuff in the market. very tangible on the deliverables. Whereas inbound is a bit more strategic and hidden. And a lot of times it's the homework behind that thing that ends up in market. Now, if you were in an org that didn't seem to value that inbound PMM and kept putting the focus on outbound, I'd be curious, how would you go about convincing leadership that it's worth the time investment to give some space for inbound?
Yeah, I think having someone argue on your behalf is always the most impactful way to get something done. This is how I've always believed it. There's that saying of like the best way to succeed in business is to build allies along the way. And so what I would do and what I do whenever I enter a new org is I build a relationship with the product team where they see us as indispensable. And, you know, at first they may feel threatened, right? They're like, well, like I collect my own insights. But one gentle way of doing this is like, what's something you'd love to know, but you don't have the time to research right now? Let me go take that on for you. And you might have to answer questions or do some work that like maybe isn't that exciting for you, but you're doing it to build an ally and to make their life easier and knowing that it's the right thing to do for the product. So they're going to give you something because PMs are busy and they have a lot of questions and a lot of things they have to answer for other people, right?
Yeah.
So you go and you do the research and it might be competitive, it might be market size, who knows? Then you bring it back and they're like, wow, that's super helpful. Like, could you maybe help me dig into the second thing? And then 3 months later, all of a sudden you're like interwoven as part of their insight collection tool set, you know? And then you use them to help advocate. And I love to do this with one product line. So let's say I come into a company and there's three products. I choose one product as the leader. I then demonstrate how that one product is now, you know, operating more effectively, operating with more insights, growing faster, the relationship is tighter. And I use that as the blueprint to say, wow, if we could do that on one product team, imagine if we could do that across all product teams. And then you have the product managers being like, well, I want what he has, you know, or I want what she has. So that's one way in. The second way in, if you're having a very difficult time from a product perspective, could be going through the finance route. So finance is a team that often feels like they're the bad guy. People think they're boring. They're just like always in the numbers. And like nothing makes them more excited than someone asking to look at their spreadsheet. And so whether this is like a finance, no, it's true. It is true. So whether this is like a pure finance team or like a RevOps team or every organization has slight differences, I like to just make them my friends and say like, hey, you know what? I nerd out over spreadsheets too. Like, could you help me like look over my formulas, you know? And you just kind of like invite them into the work you're doing. They're going to be like, wow, I didn't know a marketer could do that. Wow, I didn't know this is what product marketing did. They're going to come to you more often. You're going to bring them in more often. And all of a sudden they're going to bring you up in the meetings, right? And so it's kind of going through those different angles. If you don't have the authority to make the change.
I'm sort of hearing three options for a PMM. You can partner really close with the product and a lot of times they'll end up becoming that advocate. That's been my experience is in my current company, I'm probably skewing very heavily on inbound right now, like almost verging on some product management responsibilities. And that's probably because one of our main product managers is saying like, please give me Colin's time. Like they're very adamant about that. There's also that leadership option that you shared there. Like if you have a leader who can block and tackle for you and say like, then in that case, if you have someone that you have, hey, this one product, you're going to get to focus on inbound. You're then taking the heat on their behalf effectively. And then finance, which is probably the one I would have the hardest time breaking into, but that's a real opportunity for people who are like data driven or like RevOps driven. That's super, super helpful.
Yeah. I also think the last option is, if you're having trouble across all of those options, find examples of companies that do this well and bring those examples back and demonstrate the impact of that. So say like, and don't just use a generic example, but like hopefully you have a network where you have, you know, maybe some friends who have examples of this and you can give really concrete details of like, this is how this company does it. Here was the impact of that. Here's what we're struggling with. And I think by making this change, we could impact X or we could drive Y. And sometimes leaders just need to be able to see what something else could look like or feel confident that they're not like the only ones doing it. It's like, oh yeah, well, we also want to be like them. We should do that too.
Yeah. I'd be curious if you had like a short a short, like one or two line pitch. Like say you're a solo PMM, your CEO doesn't understand why you want to give 2 weeks to competitive research when, hey, we're shipping new products and we're shipping new features and you're not going to have time to like talk about this new feature, for example. What would be your kind of quick elevator pitch for, hey, this is why it's worth me spending 2 weeks on this? This is assuming you don't have the same resources of other people to lean on. I'd be curious how, like, would you advocate for yourself?
So it's a great one. We did not prepare this. So I have a couple of thoughts on that, even the question itself. So first of all, I think if that is the situation where you are the founder or solo PMM, I wouldn't advocate for such an extreme, because I think when you give people extremes, they have a very extreme reaction. So no one's going to say like, yeah, spend 2 weeks doing this. And so what I try to do is I try to give people bite-sized doses of what I want to grow into like a full meal, for example. And so I want to give them a taste of what they could have and make them want more. And so in that case, honestly, and like, this might be a bad answer, but
if I couldn't
get buy-in, I would do it on my own time. And I'm like, I know work-life balance is important, but like, this has been kind of part of my hustle of getting to where I am, which is like, okay, great. If they will not let me do this during the day, at night, I'm going to, you know, spend a few hours this week doing what I think could be the minimum to deliver this value. I'm then going to bring it to the table. I'm going to show the impact of it. And because you're using your own time, you're also really prioritizing what you're working on. And I think sometimes I total advocate and value, but I also think that like sometimes in order to get ahead, we have to do things differently. If everyone did things the same, everyone would get ahead.
Everyone wins. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes there is sacrifice that's required. And, you know, ideally the sacrifice isn't continuous, right? Yeah. But there's points and seasons of your career where you do need to lean in more or less. And so that might just be one of those sticky situations where I would, you know, show rather than tell.
Yeah. That's super helpful. I'm personally in a spot where I'm not at the stage of my career just because of outside demands that I can say like, oh, I'm going to give extra time. But what I have found is that because there's such an overemphasis on outbound, if you give even a small good glimpse of inbound, so like for people very quickly start to see it. So like I think of a time box, like 4 hours, a couple of weeks back to break down a vertical that we want to go after. And I created this doc and explained the different segments in it and my understanding of them. And then people send it out and they're like, this is amazing. I'm like, this took me 4 hours. I would love to spend weeks on it, but like, this is my 4 hours off the cuff. And people see the value a lot faster than you might think.
Well, that's it. And like, I also think, and this is why I kind of say like, if you say that you're going to do it in your own spare time, you're naturally going to have to fit it in, right? Like you're not going to be like, oh, I'm going to spend 2 weeks doing it. You're going to be like, I have 1 hour while I'm like waiting at my kid's dentist appointment or something, right? You are naturally time boxing. And then when we present someone, imagine you presented someone with like a 50 page deck of that vertical breakdown. They would probably be so overwhelmed. No one would read it. Maybe one person would read it. But I don't know if it was like a one pager or a Slack message or whatever you did, but you give a bite-sized version of it. It's more digestible. People want more of it. And then the conversation changes to what would need to be true for you to deliver more of this work. And then you can start to have that kind of resource allocation conversation.
Yeah. For stuff like that, Loom is my best friend. The amount of times I'm firing up Loom and just walking through a doc and it's like, hey, here's this idea in 2 or 3 minutes. Like if you want to increase your influence, just start dropping Looms in big channels. And I don't know. I found it goes a long way.
I love that. Yeah, definitely.
So I have a hunch on this one, just based on some of the comments you've said, but if you had to pick for yourself, do you see yourself as more of a inbound or an outbound PMM?
Yeah, this is so hard. So I would say like, I definitely skew more inbound PMM. Just my skill set and interests and where I like to be in the product development lifecycle. However, as you know, a recent passion of mine is product launch. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if I'm being attracted to this because, you know, for so many years as being a leader, I was guiding launches, but I wasn't necessarily building them all on myself. So now I'm like, oh, I just want to like get my hands dirty again. Or if it's just, I feel like I have a new appreciation of like product launch is almost like all a macro version of all the micro parts of product marketing, a lot of the inbound stuff coming to life. And so I love that. So I would say I'm an inbound product marketer, but I love product launch, not necessarily all of the other parts of outbound, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So like sales enablement, not necessarily a passion of yours.
Yeah. That's not going to fire me up.
Yeah. All right. So then I would be curious, what's been your workout routine then, so to speak, if you want to talk about like, hey, this right inbound arm, super strong, super buff. Got it. What have you done then to cultivate that outbound part of yourself to get stronger? And then I'd be curious if you have advice for someone who is wired more like me, where I'm a little bit flipped.
Yeah. So for me, a couple of things, and actually a lot of it came down to studying, and this just could be how I learn as well. But you know, if you work at a company, you maybe are exposed to a few products or one product with multiple features, like your line of sight is pretty narrow. And so I always love to encourage people to like study. That's the whole concept behind Ready for Launch, right? The podcast I have with Andy and Jason, where we just started like nerding out on analyzing other launches because I wanted to build this muscle for me. I was like, you know what? I think I'm pretty good at product launch, but like how are the world's best products being launched? And when I think that something is a good launch, how do I go a level deeper to not just say like, wow, great launch this week, Colin, but actually think about like what made Colin's launch good? Why did it work or why didn't it work? And so I would say studying launches is one of the best ones. I've also built up the muscle of every time I buy something, even if it's like a consumer good, I take a second to say like, why am I buying this? And why am I buying this in this moment? Because that's going to help you understand things like price, urgency, demand, channel strategy. So that's one of them. The other one is messaging and positioning. I would say is something that was, I wouldn't say would be like the best thing. And it's funny because I have a writing degree, so I love words. I love narrative, but actually turning it into messaging was definitely something that I would probably outsource to someone else on my team. And what I did here too was like practice. I would take products I like and like reverse engineer or try to build up my own messaging. If I was like, okay, like if KitKat was going to go and market to a different product, how might, or a different consumer, how might they do it? Or what if like Canva were to go into the enterprise market maybe before they did, how would I do that? And so a lot of it is just like practice, if that makes sense. Yeah. And if you can't get the practice within your own org, how do you kind of take others and get that practice and get those reps in?
I'll add for someone who's in a, relationship, I might advise that you keep some of those observations about the things you're purchasing in your brain. Because I have found that my spouse does not think it's as interesting as I do.
It's true. I also do that. So my partner, he works in sports as a sports physio. And when we met, I remember him telling me like a month after we met, he's like, I left our first date and I had no idea what you did. He's like, nice girl. Couldn't tell you what she does for work. But now I will say like, poor guy, I am always kind of like talking about business and I'm always thinking about things. And the other day we're out for a walk and he's like, let's play a fun game where we talk about half-baked business ideas. And I turned to him and I was like, who are you?
Yeah.
So maybe you could subtly, you know, influence.
I will say it's starting to happen where my wife just recently this week, I can't remember what the product was, but she was like, oh, this happened an hour ago. It's a different example. She came home with this bag of sunflower seeds. We don't eat sunflower seeds, just period. Like that.
Yeah,
I think this is it's too much work. Like why? But she came home with a bag of sunflower seeds and she's like, I totally got suckered into buying this because the branding was great. And she was just aware of the buyer psychology and why she bought it. She's like, it stood out on the shelf. It had not something that felt artistic, kind of cleared the like baseball bro aesthetic that you get with most sunflower seeds. And she bought it. Now for someone like me, then that's super helpful. Like I hear you saying like, if you're inbound wired, just start studying how do the greats do outbound and observing it and thinking about it at minimum. What would be your regimen then for someone like me, where I think I skew more outbound? I'm thinking, how do you say this in the market? What's the messaging that's going to be out there? Like, what's going to cut through? Like, that's how I'm wired. I'd be curious then, what, if you were coaching me, what's the workout routine?
Yeah, I think a couple different things. The first one I would say is, like, I think technically inbound can be a bit more complex. Like, there are like spreadsheets feel overwhelming to a lot of people, or, you know, research methodologies feels overwhelming to a lot of people. So I would start by choosing one area to learn. So maybe you're like, you know what, I really want to be great at compete. And, you know, that gives you a box to play within. And within compete, you can learn, you know, qual versus quant. You can learn a bunch of different things within that. And you can find someone who is great at that thing to coach and mentor you. I think when learning inbound, having a one-to-one mentor or coach helps a little bit more than that outbound piece. I think from an outbound, it's more about studying a lot. Inbound, it's about building like a very specific skill set. So at least in my experience, I found that. And like when coaching others, I found they need much more one-on-one support when developing that skill set. So I would say choose a part of inbound that excites you the most, or that you think, you know, you'd be most likely to be able to kind of dip your toe into. Find someone who's great at it. Learn from them, and then you can kind of expand that knowledge across all of the other parts of inbound.
That's super helpful. I'm finding that to be true in my experience. Again, another shout out to Tom. Tom, if you're listening to this, my current boss is really great at tracing through when a product gets out to market, drawing a straight line backwards into what that can mean to rep for revenue and understanding what you do out here and how it traces into revenue. And that's probably I understand it at a broad level, but like at the granular level, and then getting buy-in on why we should do something, you need to be able to trace that line before you can say, hey, like, CEO, this is why it's worth investing a bunch of resources in building this thing. Yeah. And so like I'm in that stretching period right now where like we're reporting on adoption for a feature that we just launched and how it's influencing revenue. And it's like stretching me. I'm like in Looker and I'm trying to figure stuff out. But I think for me, that combination of having someone who I'm learning from, and then I'm just kind of forcing myself to try it and forcing myself to do the things that are inbound, knowing that there's probably other people on my team. Like, I know if I just gave it to my boss, he would do it better than me, but it's forcing me to, I want to develop that part of myself.
Totally. And that's it. Like, product marketing isn't an academic thing. I mean, there's parts of it that are theoretical and academic, but we only get better by actually putting it into practice. So the more reps you can get in, the better you will be. And so it's about how do you create a safe space for you to develop that skill, right? And ideally, your manager will help you create that safe space. But I always like to de-risk things. So start with a project that like maybe only one or two people would be exposed to. So if you really mess up that spreadsheet, it's not the end of the world. Then you can kind of work up to the big one, right? So it's all about risk management and creating the right playground.
Yeah. All right. To close, I want to come back to that common phrase that you beat up on about the phrase for people who are not familiar is that people will say that product management's job I'm about to butcher it. Can you say the phrase for me? It's product manager's
product
job.
Product managers put products on the shelf. Product marketers get them off the shelf.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I actually was going to say it and then it felt so untruthful that I got it wrong, but that's exactly the phrase. So that's a really common phrase. Yeah. Why the bristling response against it?
First of all, I think it creates a dividing line between the two functions. When I actually think that the two functions need to work hand in hand throughout the entire development process. And so, product managers are developing the product. Yes, product marketers are getting it sold. So like there's some truth there. It's not like I'm saying like this is wildly untrue. I just think it's like a limited view and probably a divisive view. I remember one time in a job interview, someone gave me this like analogy because I was like, how do you imagine PM and PMM working together? And they're like, I imagine them giving each other a piggyback ride. Sometimes the PM's carrying the PMM and sometimes the PMM's carrying the PM. And I was like, I love that. And it's like, sometimes they need to take a break and put the other person on their back. So I just like that so much more. I like this idea of like bring it back to a camp thing. It's like two campers on the first day of camp and, you know, one of them gets a little tired and, you know, they can't read the map as well as the other person. So the other person takes the lead and then they go and then, you know. So I just think it's a little flat. And I think it limits our opportunity and potential and impact as product marketers to only think of it as getting products off the shelf.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Just even the more influential I become in my role, the more I am influencing what actually gets on the shelf. Exactly. And it sells short product managers, many of whom have go-to-market savvy. Like they understand 100%. Like why customers buy. And so I fully agree with that take. At best, on your first date, it might have helped your partner understand what you do. Like unnuanced.
That's true. If it's someone who has no idea what you do, you could lead with that. But amongst product managers and product marketers, I think we need to retire it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, Tamara, this was really so fun. If people want to keep up with you and what you're up to at PMM Camp, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. I usually write there every day and I respond back to everyone. So that's a great spot. Or you can go to pmmcamp.com. You can subscribe to my newsletter. It comes out every Sunday. And you can see all the other stuff I'm doing as well. Everything's there on the website.
Yes, highly recommend signing up for the newsletter. I love the newsletter. Just that's a Colin Majak stamp of approval. But again, thank you so much for giving your time.
Yes,
and we'll have to do this again soon.
Absolutely.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Back again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.